Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. So is anybody else as curious as I am as to what's going to happen in Arizona? This is the story of the century. This is amazing. The entire Democrat Party is fighting for their political life. And they're like, you know, just I don't know what they're thinking. You know, it's like they got caught. They know they got caught. They know they stole the election. They know everything that's going on right now is absolutely justified. This audit is going to be fascinating. The way this goes, because the evidence is coming out and they're saying, well, you can't use ultraviolet, you know, light on those ballots. It's going to ruin them. And then the leader comes out and says, well, wait a minute, you know, sunlight's a whole lot stronger in ultraviolet than we're using. And we're just trying to find, you know, the evidence of, I guess they're looking for watermarks and folds and all this other kind of stuff. But they're saying upwards of 500,000 ballots in Arizona alone are fraudulent. Biden only, you know, got they only frauded 10,000 votes above Trump's votes. Trump had so many votes nationwide. Because we talked about this for 2 years. We talked about, you know, you've got to outvote the vote fraud. I mean, that was my claim. I could have made a bumper sticker out of it. I mean, I said it so often. But, yeah, it was outvote the vote fraud. And we did. Except they outfrauded the vote, you know. And then the vote, but they had to outfraud the vote by such a huge amount that they got caught. And so now, and Arizona's the first. Everybody's watching Arizona. So stand by for – can you hear the glee in my voice? It's really, I'm enjoying this more than you can possibly imagine. But everybody's going to be watching Arizona. So tomorrow, the election correction report is going to pretty much be, you know, it's going to be all Arizona. And I've got the first half hour. Then I've got a couple of guests. I've got Chief Dan Skyhorse of the Creek Tribe and then the Concerned Veterans for America. And then I have the last half hour. I'll go back to it. Anything I didn't cover in the first half hour. Today's going to be interesting. I've got Jean Vernig, our life coach, who's going to be on as soon as I stop talking, get her theme. And then we've got who else? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Josie with the South of the Border report. And then we have I was just talking to her off the air. Maybe we'll get a vaccine report instead because there's so much going on with that as well. And then we've got a special report from Michael Volpe, who is an investigative reporter in Chicago. And he's been with us since the beginning. Michael's been on the air a ton of times here. And we haven't heard from him for a while. He's the genius behind our Action Radio Family Law page. So if you have any problems with family law, corruption with family law courts, we cover it all. And we've been doing it since we started, you know, over 2 years ago. And so it's a huge issue. It's one of the most underreported issues in the country. And it affects millions of people. I mean, anytime you get divorced or anything, you know, as far as, you know, kids, custody, child support, all that kind of stuff, kids taken away by CPS, kids ending up in foster care, the whole human trafficking issue that is huge. Out of foster care, that's family court, okay? And so it touches everybody sometime, and so that's the big deal with that. All right, let's get Gene, and I'll be right back. In these times of trial and tribulation, of epidemic and or economic crisis, of personal challenge and societal collapse, there is one place you can retreat, recharge, and re-energize to take on the world. That place is the Life Coach Report with Jean Vernig here on Action Radio. What better way to start your day? Good morning, Jean.
Hi. Good morning, everybody.
As we let our music mellow us out, I just realized when we expand your report to the Vernig Report, which is basically anything you want, I'm going to have to make a new theme. But I like that theme. I'll just change it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, people need to keep thinking about that theme as I talk today and breathe, because I may not breathe for a while. But what I want to talk about
today. Oh, please
today
keep breathing.
Is...
I need you for the report.
So what I want to talk today about is something that I saw on Facebook last week, and I think it's happening all over the place. And I knew what was happening, but I just never, you know, I can't wrap my head around it. But what it is someone wrote on there, I'm in a little neighborhood community, or I live in a small county, and there was a post on about why one of the gas stations were closed. What's going on? And someone chimed in, and then the assistant manager chimed in. Basically, the manager and the assistant manager were working 90 hours the last, like, 3 weeks, and they can't find help. And I'm just like, how ironic is that in the United States that the government is so quick to give a handout, but yet where are the people that are taking that handout that could be working but are not working because, one, the job is beneath them, or, two, why work when you're getting a – I don't want to say getting a paycheck. You're not getting a paycheck when you're getting free money. But where did we lose the incentive to take care of ourselves? Where did we lose the pride in doing something? And people may think, well, I ain't going to work for $10, 12, whatever dollars an hour they're making. Do you know what? You may be making that amount of money, but and for those people that even do it full-time on a consistent basis, what are those jobs meant to be? They're meant to be stepping stones. I can't tell you how many people I've met that started out at McDonald's as just a mere minimum wage earning person, and they work their way up the ranks. And that's just the same with everything. But also, I got another question. Why does making money or how much money we make at a job define who we are, and who allowed that to happen? Because these jobs, even a job like that, you may say, well, I'm retired and I'm not going back to work for that amount of money. You know what? I think of people my age or older or younger, anybody in between. So we may not be working, making as much as we did before, but if you're retired, this may just be a little bit more money for you. And think of what you could have, the influence you could have on a younger person who's this may be their first job. Teach them work ethic, because a lot of people don't know what that is. Teach them the importance of maybe saving money versus running out and buying the next thing that catches your fancy because you want to keep up with your friends. And you know what? You can have a big, huge house. You can have all the money in the world. Just ask Mr. Jobs. Steven Jobs. And what does that do? It doesn't buy you your health, and it doesn't buy you your life. And so what I encourage people to do is, if you know a young person or an old person or anybody in between and they're not working, encourage them to go do something. And I kind of blame our government for the fact that, you know, if someone takes a job, because even the grocery stores, a lot of them are looking for people. Why do we get paid for doing nothing? Why don't they try to give people that may be making money but not what they normally are making, or if they have to take, they go back and pay because the jobs they're doing or was doing is no longer here or whatever. Then why doesn't the government step in and give them something like, you know, reduce groceries? And I know they have that now with the WIC cards and all that for, you know, people on welfare. But get people off welfare. What are you teaching your children by not working? And yes, there are some people that can't work, but how many people do you know that could work but choose not to work?
Well, I'm just taking a lot of notes.
And
this
so
is great.
We need to ask ourselves, are we part of the problem or are we the solution? And I tell you, Role models are huge in people's lives, regardless what age you are. I can learn from a little child, but a lot of the things that could benefit us as adults, you know, we're not taught. And as an adult, I look back and I'm just like, wow, I wish I would have known this when I was younger. I wish I would have known that when I was younger. Children and play. As a therapist, I can't tell you how many parents used to tell me, but my child doesn't play with toys. Bottom line is,
what?
People just automatically know what to do with a toy. Other people or other kids, you have to teach them. You have to show them. No, a puzzle's not for just dumping out when you're 7 years old. Look, you can dump it out, but then you put it back in. And a lot of people, our kids, may not know that. They have to be taught. And so we right away assume that, boom, osmosis or whatever, we're just going to know all this stuff. No, we're not. And so don't ever think any job is beneath any of us, because you know what? I always tell people, we need every job. We need janitors. We need housekeepers. We need maintenance people. We need nurses. We need doctors. We need lawyers. We need everybody in between, and not one because you make $1 million. And how ironic in this country, actors, actresses, sports people, politicians, how much money they make and what they do for our society in a positive way. For the most part, zero. If you look at all the issues we have now, it's like, to me, where do they stem from? They stem from TV, music industry. They stem from the sport people because what? They have an agenda they're pushing. And you can't tell me these people that are spewing, you know, hatred, you know, oh, Trump is so hatred, filled with hatred, or the Republicans are, or this person is, or that person is. You look at rap music and you tell me, that's not a kumbaya song for the most part. Some of those lyrics, and it wouldn't be bad, but who's often listening to them? Little kids. And granted, sometimes little kids don't even understand the words that are being said. But,
yeah,
you know,
but they'll say them.
No. Yeah, how ironic is that? And then you've got Maxine Waters, Miss Hatred herself. It's like, and what she has done for years, and what happened? Nancy Pelosi sticks up for her? And Nancy Pelosi sticks up for George Floyd. No, he should not be killed in the way he was killed or died. But who knows? I mean, I still don't know. Even after the trial's over, I still don't know if the knee, I mean, and then there's like, well, if you look at a different angle, his knee wasn't really on the neck. I'm not going to argue anything. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a forensic person. I'm nothing. But I'm just like, you know what? We don't know how much drugs in his system could have affected how he was doing. And they say, well, he was yelling. He can't breathe. And then someone else says, well, pretty much everybody yells that when they don't want to get arrested. But my point is, if you'd be doing the right thing, you wouldn't be doing. He wouldn't have even got the knee to the neck or whatever. Why? Because he would have did it peacefully. You know, the cop stops me, and I tell you, I've been stopped by cops for, you know, going over the speed limit, and some of them are really big jerks. But you know what? I'm not going to paint that brush that everybody is. But I also stopped. Even one time I got stopped for not stopping at a stop sign, and I was so mad because I stopped. But because I was going faster off the viaduct, the guy was like, well, I can't believe you stopped that fast. Yeah, I did, but maybe I didn't stop for 10 seconds. But I was in the middle of nowhere. I looked both ways. Nobody was coming. I went. But you know what? I didn't argue. I just shut up and paid the fine and been done with it. But, you know, it's like, to say, oh, it's just this person or that person. No, it's how we react, how we respond, how we interact with people. And so people, as we get older, and it can be 20, you can be older at 20. I'm talking about you can be a role model for younger people. And where are these parents of these 13-year-olds, these 16-year-olds that are running around at night? It's like we need to be responsible for the young kids. They at that age, they should not be allowed outside. I don't even care if they're with someone. No, you shouldn't be on this. We got to do a better job at bringing children up. But we also, everybody, we need to do a better job at returning the work ethic, to get paid for doing something. Take pride in what you do. Don't matter what you do. Just take pride because you're doing the best you can. I don't care how menial it is. I tell you, you have someone, like even if you go into a convenience store and you maybe have frazzled, you maybe overslept, running late, then you have to go get gas and then you want to go get a cup of coffee. I don't care what it is. You go in there and that person is nice to you. They say hello, even with their mask on. They say hello or have a great day. You know what? Something like that can really change your day. Or you get up and you start arguing with your spouse. Oh, that really puts someone in a good mood. So you leave for work. You're already, you know, tense, stressed. And then you get someplace and they actually, you know, are very friendly. Or they, you know what I mean? It can be anything. You get out of bed, you stub your toe. That's not a good way to start the day. Or in my case, I may step in dog pee. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, boy, what a way to wake up. But, you know, there's different ways people can do throughout your day, you know, just to say, open a door for you. You know, I can't even tell you how just someone opening the door for me if I have my hands full, what that makes me feel. It's like, thank you, thank you. And so don't ever think that you're beneath something or you're above something. No, just because you're working a certain way or making a certain amount of money. I tell you, as I said, money don't buy you happiness. And the thing is with that, I think we just got our ethics and morals and everything in this country so messed up because so many people feel that their self-worth is wrapped around the money they have in the bank or the money they make, they get their paycheck. And the reason I say that, years ago, I'll never forget this, I knew this guy that his uncle was a janitor all his life. And he lived in a big house, but back then, you know, he bought the house and they remodeled, whatever, never had kids. Turns out he died a multimillionaire. What did he do? He invested his money. And so it's like, yeah, he maybe was making minimum wage, but on his deathbed, he sure wasn't the minimum wage making person that people thought him to be. And it's like, oh, how ironic is that? So it doesn't matter. You may do minimum wage paying jobs, but you may be making money doing something else, like making music. You know what I mean? Whatever it is. That may not be your focal way of making money. And so don't ever, ever let anybody tell you that you're a loser or make you feel like you're a loser or less than they are based on what you do and based on your paycheck. Because I tell you, I know a lot of people that are making a lot of money, and I don't know why, because what they're doing is not godly, and it sure isn't helping society or humankind as a whole.
Hmm.
But now I'm going to breathe.
Okay, that sounds good. No, I'm just curious because I'm going to start way back when you first started. And I'm getting an echo here. Why am I getting an echo? All right. You said something really interesting here about what was the last thing you said about, you know, it's not a question of how much money you make. You know, there are no losers based on salary. You know a lot of rich people that are making all kinds of money doing things that you don't think should make a lot of money. Let me start there. I don't want names, but just like categories of jobs that these people are doing. Got a for instance for me?
I could give you anything, but it's mm-hmm. one of them is the pharmaceutical companies, the people in
okay.
charge of the pharmaceutical companies. Okay.
Oh, like
why
CEOs?
Are you getting
okay.
that money? Or, yes.
Yeah.
Or let's say the person in charge of a bank. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm not talking your little mom and pop bank.
Okay.
I'm talking name banks, you know, stuff like that. And I don't want to begrudge anybody, but
mm-hmm.
you look at the postal, the guy in charge of the postal service, how much money
mm-hmm.
he makes in a year. And it's like, now what are they doing? They're not solving issues with the postal service. You know, if you look at I can't tell you how many places I've gone in the post office, and those are some of the, but that and motor vehicle places. For a while there, I thought, man, is the way to get a job is to find the rudest people? So when I get a friendly person, I'm just like, oh my God, I thank them. Because it's like, and I've done that before. I've gone into grocery stores and went up and I hunted down the manager. And they're like, oh Jesus, what's this person going to bitch about now? But I was just like, I just want you to know, you have the most helpful, friendly people I have ever seen in a grocery store in a long time. And the lady just, the one time recently, the plane's going by, a lady just opened her mouth. She didn't have a word to say to me. I think she was ready for me to complain that they were out of something. And I was just like, no. I just want you to know, because people are real quick to complain and point
mm-hmm.
fault with someone else, but they hardly ever pay a compliment to someone. And do those grocery store people, those people walking, you know, stocking shelves and stuff, or whatever, do they make $30 an hour? Heck no. I know some people that work in the grocery store business, and they're in management, and they don't make not that much money compared to what they work. But, you know,
yeah.
it's like, wow.
Well,
but, yeah, these people, it's just amazing. And I want to tell you another one. One place I worked,
oh, sure.
it was in healthcare. And at the end of the year, I'll never forget this. I actually worked two places. We got bonuses. So one place, I love that place. Why? Because we got two. This was years ago, but we got a two. Everybody across the board got a $250 bonus. Okay, that's not much money. No, but everybody got that same bonus. Another
right.
place I worked, they got a bonus based on their income. So right there, what are you saying? You're saying that the CEO, you're saying that the people making more money, nurses, therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists, those people, they are getting more of a bonus because they are more important. Then you got the aides, you got the housekeepers, the cooks, all those people, maintenance, they don't make as much money. So they got a lower bonus. And how far is that? We need the housekeepers. We need the maintenance people. You know, and so I'm telling you, why? Why is it based on your income? It shouldn't be, because we are all one.
Yeah, you've got to understand, well, that's a bad way to put it. There's a value system to salaries that I don't think a lot of people understand, you know, and when people, especially, you know, you get folks on the left that say, you know, well, we should have a minimum wage that's a livable wage. And no, you shouldn't. And the reason that you shouldn't, I'm not trying to be cold, heartless, or cruel, but the reason that you shouldn't is salaries are not based on your lifestyle. They're based on how much money you generate for the person employing you. Because the person employing you is basically renting your service, you know, for the time that you're on the job, and they will pay you so much money. Now, the only way they can pay you so much money is if you generate even more money for the company. So a doctor might do like a heart surgery, for example, and generate $1 million, you know, for the hospital. Well, so it's worthwhile paying that doctor $500,000 a year. And you think, well, wait a minute, they're only working, you know, twice a week, only doing two operations a week or three operations a week. And the rest of the time, they're like sitting, reading, discussing stuff, consulting with patients. Why are we paying them all this money? Because they're really worth it for that operation. Okay. That's why you're paying them the money. So you're not going to pay cooks the same amount because the cooks don't generate the same kind of, the same level of income. In the same way that and welfare has really screwed people up, because welfare, you get more money per kid. Well, you can't do that on your job. You can't go to your job and say, hey, I'm having a kid. I need a $25,000 a year raise. You know, you can't do that because the job will go, wait a minute. Let me see how much you're generating for the company. You're generating this amount for the company. Well, you can talk about a performance raise, but you see, the company looks at it from their point of view as to how much money you're generating for them. You can't look at it from your personal point of view. Salaries are not based on what you want. They're not based on what you think you should get. They're not based on your lifestyle. They're not based on your expenses. They're not based on your bills. They're not based on the number of kids you have. They're not based on anything except what the employer can get from you. Now, that all changes with government, because government has government unions that should be illegal, like the teachers and the SAEU and all these other folks. And they become little power groups within the government, which the government buys with your tax dollars to get their votes. So that's a screwed up system. So government salaries aren't based on your performance. Look at Dr. Fauci, you know, who we affectionately call Dr. Fascist around here. This guy is more responsible than anybody else for at least 500,000 deaths of Americans, and he's the highest paid employee in the government. Okay, think about that. We're giving the greatest financial reward to the person that's killed the most people in our country in our entire history. Tell me that isn't screwed up morally, okay? You know, because he denied hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, he's denied vitamin D and C, he's denied zinc, he's denied all the cures and all the immune boosters to this country. In fact, there's a new something I want to talk about in the days coming up, the COVID-19 Consumer Protection Act, which basically says that you shouldn't be taking vitamins. There's no, you know, vitamin D, vitamin C. In other words, not only have they gotten rid of the cures of COVID, now they're getting rid of all the preventive measures, leading you back to vaccines. And that and Fauci, you know, Dr. Fascist is nothing, and I said this yesterday, he's nothing but a genocidal, you know, corporate, drug-pushing psychopath. That's who he is. And yet, he's the highest-paid person in government, whereas he should be in jail for mass murder, you know, right up there with Dr. Mengele and all the other people, you know, who have done the same kind of thing. So the getting back to salaries, this whole money, people, there's a weird thing about money. So the government is paying people not to work, all right? That is insane. And they're doing that to get votes. They're buying votes because they're saying to the people, you know, you don't have to work. We're going to pay you, you know, to not work. And in return for that, we want your vote. Okay. So that's insane. Now, who are they getting the money from to do that? The very people who need those people to work for them, the employers, the people, the middle class, the upper middle class, the wealthier folks that are creating companies, they're creating jobs, they're doing all this kind of stuff. And they need those people to come work for them. All right. And the government's paying them not to work. So the government is actually sabotaging the economy of this country because they want to perpetuate, well, the Democrats really, because they want to perpetuate the Democrat power at the expense of the economy. So they're willing to destroy the economy of this country to pay people not to work so they'll get more votes. But what they don't realize is once the economy is destroyed, it doesn't matter. People aren't going to be able to vote. They're going to be scrounging around for all kinds of other things, but they don't see it that way. So the psychology of money and the psychology of salaries is fascinating. But to get back to your original point, way back when we first started this, that was an excellent presentation. Is that it all started with President Johnson? Okay, the Great Society. When we started saying to single mothers that they don't need husbands, and, you know, the kids don't need fathers. You know, the government, you can marry the government. You know, you will have all your needs taken care of. So if you get pregnant, you're going to get a house, or you're going to get housing. You're going to get Section 8 housing. You're going to get food stamps. You're going to get WIC. You're going to get all the things that a working family would provide. In other words, you know, you have a two-parent family would provide, and the government's going to be the other parent. That's where it all started, 1965, somewhere in there. And the idea that the government should take care of your family as opposed to your family, and that fathers are expendable. And basically sperm donors, and that's it. And after that, who needs the guys? Hey, because the women have got the government to pay for everything. And where do the guys go? Well, drugs, gangs, you know, unemployment, you know, and whatever they want to do. But the destruction of the family by the Great Society is where this all started, to answer your question.
I just want to make a comment about, and if what you made, it made perfect sense about, you know, the physician making more money. And I granted you have mm-hmm. to look at their expertise. I don't begrudge them. They deserve that. They deserve that. But what I'm saying is, like, when it comes to bonuses and stuff, I mean, we're not mm-hmm. talking thousands of dollars worth of bonuses. But, you know, it's like if you're doing a bonus, I mean, for just like, how would you say? Because they're nonprofit, so they can't show a profit. That's what I'm talking. Anything else, whatever. But I've worked in places where we were all told for a couple of years we couldn't get a bonus, and the top people would be flowing somewhere for a week or a weekend getaway. Mm-hmm. It turns out some of them got bonuses, but no, we couldn't because, oh no, the company, which was nationwide, was strapped for money. So it's like interesting what they tell some people, but not.
Yeah, that's
true.
What we call a double standard.
that's
corruption
within
your company.
You talk about paying people. It's like the guy that owns Amazon, how much mm-hmm. money he makes. He don't pay his employees well. You know, now, I mean, for
the
manual labor. No. And so it's like, yeah, Amazon. Yeah. And so it's like with Amazon, it's like, mm-hmm. okay. And yes, he founded something, I mean, gold mine, but it's like, you got all that money. Why can't you pay your employees even a dollar an hour more? You know, that's not even going to be a dent in the bucket.
A dent in the bucket for him.
He just chooses not to.
Exactly.
So don't come and talk to me about, you know, people and you know, black people discriminated and, you know, just like Zuckerberg and all those other people. You know, it's just like that, you know, that social media that, you know, certain people don't have a say. Yeah, you know, but it's not the people you think. They're going political-wise. Does it matter what your political view is? No. Anybody should have a right to be able to say what they want, and it's up to the person reading it or listening to it to decide, is it true, is it not true? Do they agree with it or not, or what? But why is it, can only one person make us to have a statement, and then the other person can't? It don't make any sense. You know, how this country has just, in a matter of time, in a quick period of time, how we've mm-hmm. changed. And I know it's going to go back. I have faith. Not that it needs to go back, but I have faith. I have faith in us as a people. I have faith of us as individuals that we are going to wake up and we are going to start demanding that people be treated equal, but also know that it's like certain people aren't treated equal. No, if you want to be treated equal, then you don't ask on a job application what nationality you are. You don't ask if you're male or female because it shouldn't matter. You know, or when you're trying to get into a school, don't ask what, you know, if you're black, white, Hispanic, whatever, Asian. No, it shouldn't matter because you know what? Everybody's treated equal. You know, people want to be treated equal.
Well, you have to get a free reform of action and get rid of government racial classifications, which I agree with. We talked about that a couple of years ago when we had the mandatory census question mandatory citizenship question on the census was that one of the things people came up with was that we don't want to have any racial classifications in government anymore. If you want to end racism, that's one of the best ways to do it, is to get rid of the racial classifications. Because when people see it every day, they see it everywhere they go. They see it on job applications. They see it on census forms. They see it at the DMV. They see it on gun background checks. And everywhere people see racial classifications, that reinforces the idea that we're different and that we're separate. And that's a crime. I've got a call, too. I want to take here in just a second, 703 area code. So I'm going to get them ready to go on the air. And, Gene, are you hearing a repeat? I'm getting my voice coming back to me. And there's a little bit of feedback this morning. I'm not sure what's going
on.
No, I'm
not.
Okay. Checking my microphones and everything else. All right, let's take a call. And this is a new number. Not sure who this is, so I'm quick with the button. So be good, caller. And 703 area code, there we go. You're on the air with Gene Vernig and me. This is Greg, and this is Action Radio. Welcome. Oh, did you just want to listen instead? Here's your chance. Immortality on the radio. Okay, put you back on hold. A lot of folks, again, I repeat this, that if you call into the show, I'm going to put you on the air. All right, unless there's a good reason not to, like you're one of my band callers or something like that. But folks, occasionally call in and they just want to listen. And that's fine, but the best way to listen is to listen off the air, which is at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, which is the website you see in front of you when you pull up our page. That's the way to do it. But if you want to call, I mean, I love callers. This is what we're all about. So feel free to call. But if you do call just to listen, I'm gonna pick up your line probably. All right, back to you, Gene. Because I have many more things to talk about here. And we're waiting for Josie's going to join us here in just a little bit, too. So.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I want to tell people just beware. And when you're talking to young people, old people, and just watch your own mannerisms about just the difference in salary and different, not even salary, but the different job titles and stuff like that. When I was a kid, a teenager, I always laughed because my cousin, he worked from a young age, and he's the same age as me, but he knew the locals. I grew up in a small farming community, and he knew the person that picked up the trash, and so he would go help him pick up the trash. And for most people, you're like, oh God, I would hate to do that. But you know what he did? He called himself a garbologist. Yeah, I've got a new job. I'm going to be a garbologist. Now, garbologist, I thought, sounded more, it just sounded a lot more fun than trash picker-upper, you know, that type of thing. But it's
hey, listen,
like,
those trash folks
what?
Are union. That's a union job. They make a good living. There's nothing wrong with being a trash cleaner-upper. Imagine not being able to do that. You know, I want to bring up something to the law.
But they work
say.
Hard.
They do work they hard. Work and hard they also things. Risking disease, you know, dogs. You know,
right,
your bad food, you know, whatever bugs are in there with your bad food, you know, so it's a crazy job.
It's a nasty job, you know,
it is.
To pick up, you know what I mean? It's smelly. Yeah. I feel, you know, sometimes it's like, oh my God, I feel bad for them because you put a bag in the trash and some bags are pretty heavy. And I know now some places they have the automated system, but a lot of places still don't. And, you know, it's just like, but the thing is when you say someone, oh, they work for the garbage. They pick up garbage. And I had a neighbor that did that, or still does it. And, it's a good job. It's a hard job. But when you talk to people about, okay, what do you want to be when you grow up? Not too many people. There are some that want to be that. But most of them, it's like, oh, you know, that's...
Yeah, and
that.
What if that person kids writes...
They're looked at more negatively. And why?
Yeah.
No, because we need people like that. Can you imagine the places where the garbage people or certain things go on strike? And garbage piles up, you know, and it's or even with the riots last year and what was going on in some of those cities. And you go in there, which I don't begrudge them, but it's like are people just throwing stuff on the street. It's like it doesn't take long before you get disease, before you get rodents and things like that or more of them. And so it's like, we should not value people based on their job.
They're different. Yeah, no, absolutely right. But there's different reasons for working, too. You know, a lot of people think that your job is your life. And you talked about this a little bit earlier. You know, and so someone that is a garbage collector might also be writing screenplays. You know, they might be doing things to try and develop, like me, for example. You know, I don't talk about this too often, but, you know, I have a part-time job delivering pizza. Why? Because it supplements the show. Why? Because we don't have our huge national accounts yet. When we do have our huge national accounts, which hopefully will be fairly soon, you know, I'm not going to be doing that anymore. Does that mean my whole life is delivering pizza? No, it's a supplement of income. People take a job because they need money, okay? Or it's a career, or it's because they're bored, or, you know, for whatever reason, or because they have to, they have a family to support. I mean, or themselves to support. I mean, there are an infinite number of reasons to take a job. But basically, you're taking a job so you make money. Okay. Now, if you can live your passion, if your passion is like we say, heart surgeon, you know, that takes years and years of dedication. You've got to, you know, be immensely good at it, you know, and just because you go into it doesn't mean you're going to be able to do it. That's another thing too. Or airline pilot or novelist or any number of professions or film director or, you know, there's some really cool jobs out there that very few people get to do. You know, everybody wants to try. I mean, how many actors make money at acting? What? 1-2%? And even then, their award ceremonies suck. Well, we could talk about that too. But the point is that there's a lot of jobs out there that there's only so many people that can get so many spots. Now, the person who's not going to be a great actor doesn't mean they don't love it. They might do community theater, okay? And in the meantime, their day job might be garbage collecting, okay? So they're performing a good service. They're making a ridiculous amount of money because it's a union contract. All these wonderful things are happening, right? And yet, their real passion is community theater. Okay. So the job, the garbage collecting, that's not their life. Their life is theater, but that job allows them to pay their bills, support whatever family they have and still do their theater thing. So life is not all about your job. It's not all about your money. It's not, you can't break it down that simply because there's so many reasons for a job. Your job may be your passion. Now, Action Radio is my passion and it's going to make all of us hopefully a lot of money, but that's not why we're doing it. I mean, that's a nice byproduct because I want a jet and you want something and everybody wants something else. And we should be able to play with the money we make. We should be able to take the fruits of our labors. If we have a better idea, if we're smarter than other people, if we're more competitive, if we're able to create something, you know, that people are going to copy, which is going to be really funny to watch, all right? You know, Gene, when we see the first, you know, copy Action Radio show, we listen in and call in. Hey, so how do you guys do that anyway? That's going to be fun. Right. But the point is, if we have a better idea, okay, that's part of the reward. If you're the entrepreneur, if you're the first to do something, if you're breaking the new ground, why shouldn't you reap the rewards? See, that's part of being a free society, life, liberty, and property. Okay. You know, and that was life, right, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but it property is part of happiness to me and everybody. Right, that's how it works. Yeah.
Right. Well, look at the Black Lives Matter people. And I heard last week that, like, I shouldn't say, I don't know if it's 92 or 98% of the money they bring in goes mm-hmm. to themselves. It doesn't even go to Black Lives Matter issues. And when you start something, yeah, it's up to you to decide where the money goes, what percentage, mm-hmm. whatever. And I know you talk about, like, what is it, United Way and places like that. Very mm-hmm. little money gets put to where, you know, to the good of others, you know, to help others. But
yeah, the fundraising organizations.
Like when you are making a lot of money, then mm-hmm. make sure you remember keeping the people that are working for you. Because the thing is, as I said, even with the Amazon, it takes everybody to make that company go. And actually to get those packages out within 24 hours to that home or wherever, that takes, it's a lot of grunt work from the people that are way, way below him. And so, yeah.
But they didn't start the company.
You know,
they didn't take the risk. They didn't put their, But they didn't put their finances on the, they didn't put their life savings on the line. They didn't put whatever it took to get Jeff Bezos, you know, to buy Amazon, whatever financial things he had to do, the venture capital, the whole bit. He had to put that together. Okay.
Right. And I don't begrudge him. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, it's mm-hmm. like, remember the people that help you do the ticking, the day-to-day operations, because it's just, it may be him at first, but he's already really reaping. And I'm not saying that he needs to give 90% of what he makes, you know, what the company makes to his employees. No, just be fair. You know, just make them know that you appreciate them. And sometimes you may never be able to make people know you appreciate them, but I tell you, it's like, I've worked with, in some places where the places, when I started there, I knew they could not afford to pay me maybe my years based on salary, what I felt, mm-hmm. who I deserved. But I went there because I appreciated who they were and what they stood for. And I also appreciated the fact that who they were willing to serve. other places weren't as willing. They're more into the money. Yeah, and I'll never forget, a couple of years ago, I worked at this place. It's a therapy place that has quite a few places around the country. And one of the people there said, you know what, they love hiring new grads because they work them to death for cheap wages the first couple of years because they know they want the experience. And then the therapist will move on. But the sad
thing, called exploitation.
Therapists are often burnt out by that time. And how sad is that to be known as that? You know,
well, listen,
that's
when I was a flight instructor,
I had
a flight instructor at school say that we're going to pay you $8 an hour, you know, because we know you need the experience. We know we've got you. We know that, you know, if you're going to move on in aviation, you know, this is the way it is. And it was pure exploitation. I wrote about my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. It was absolutely ridiculous. Now, that's why I became a freelance instructor. So then I could get $20 an hour. But I wasn't getting as many students. So, you know, it's a marketing thing. And then, of course, the whole aviation industry collapsed. So it didn't matter. They went out of business being cheap, and nobody wanted to go to their school anyway. So stuff happens. There's a lot to it. Anyway, Josie's on the line. I want to get her involved here as well. And we got Michael at 8 o'clock. So we want to get Josie to immediately. I don't have your theme yet, Josie. I'm sorry. I will. But let's.
Okay,
if you have
great.
A comment,
I'm going to have to sign off. So I want to say goodbye, everybody, and have a great.
Well, there we go. Thank you for your report. Appreciate it. As we move to the Vernig report on whatever interests us or her, actually, as we go. Good morning, Josie. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Greg. How are you? Well,
great time.
I can talk about whatever you like, but I kind of wanted to give you an update what's going on in Colombia.
Yeah, let's do that. Oh, that's right. Yeah, because we talked about another topic possibly, you know, because I know we're both big on the whole vaccine issue. But I think if I remember, and I should have written this down, but you wanted to do Colombia and Costa Rica and some other places, give us some updates on what's going on.
Yeah, I did.
It's your report. Go for it.
Yeah, I'll do Colombia a little bit this morning. We can talk about the vaccine because, you know, it's
no, your choice.
I'm going to do Colombia because, you know, the economy in Colombia was booming, and it's still booming, but not as much right now because of the COVID. And the reason Colombia is very popular is because, you know, their coffee. A lot of the coffee, and since we're
Juan
addicted
Valdez.
In the United States.
I don't see Juan Valdez commercials anymore. What happened? Was that too exploitive, or was that deemed racist, or what happened? Juan Valdez.
I don't know.
From the mountains of Colombia. Mountain
grown.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Sorry. I'm having too much fun here.
That was
cute. But Colombia's also known for drugs, too. You know, they were known for the corruption, the drugs, and cocaine and everything else. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, a lot of the drug comes from Colombia and goes directly to Venezuela, and from Venezuela it goes to Honduras, and from Honduras it comes here. But the coffee is booming, like you won't believe. And you know, bananas comes from Colombia too, a lot of banana, but mainly coffee, silver, gold, and especially the emerald, because it's one of the best countries in the world where they have the best emerald.
Really?
Colombia is the best. But right now, tourism has slowed down a little bit. And, you know, a lot of the tourists were going to Colombia because people are not going to Mexico because the cartels have taken over Acapulco, Cancun. The only thing, like I said last time, it was Cozumel is the safest right now because it's a tiny island. They have it under control. But all the other places and vacation is very dangerous right now. They're beheading so many people in Acapulco. And,
you don't hear about that on the news. Yeah. What about the West
Coast?
What about West Coast? I took my daughter on a cruise. We went to what they call the Mexican Riviera, Mazatlan, Cabo San Lucas, and Puerto Vallarta. How are they? Are they protected?
It's a little dangerous everywhere right now because the cartel are taking over everything in Mexico with the there's a lot of ISIS in Mexico all over. The terrorists are mingled with the cartels, you know. And then at the border they join together with the coyotes. But Colombia, it's a very very it's developing so beautiful, and now because of China moving in Colombia, they're buying a lot of property. They have a lot of businesses. I mean, it is out of control. The Chinese buying so much land.
Well,
in,
they don't have to sell.
Colombia,
you know, these governments can pass laws. So here's what if people understand China. China goes in, they make all kinds of loans that they know these countries can't pay back, but they take the money because it's easy money. They're like drug dealers. You know, and the drug is money, and they give money, and then the deal is, well, when they can't pay back, which the Chinese know about, you know, then they buy these things or they get them really cheap, and China's buying up property all over the world. Like capitalism for them, communism for their people, and colonialism for everybody else. I mean, that's pretty much how China seems to be operating.
Yeah, that's what China's doing. They're opening a lot of businesses in Colombia. It's out of control. And Marisol was telling me, because she's still over there in Colombia, she was telling me that the governors and mayors, because they do have governors in Colombia besides just the president, like in most countries, they're in bed with China, and they're radical. The president is very good. He's trying to do good things, but they're not allowing him, the governors, you know. So they get in the middle of everything that's going on.
Oh, it's like our governors with the lockdowns. Yeah, they're still doing it. Yeah. When Trump was trying to improve the economy and get things going, yeah.
And right now they have curfew in Colombia from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. in the morning. Other places in the country, they have them from 5 to 5. So they are really hurting the restaurant industry because, you know, in a lot of Spanish countries in South America, not Central America, but South America, people go home around noon and take a siesta. And then you come back and go to work at 2 p.m. and get off until 8 something. So about that time, they're closing their restaurants and they're losing a lot of business because, you know, the Latino people, we go to eat at 9, 10 o'clock at night. We're out in restaurants. For us, it's normal.
Yeah, I noticed that in you know? Italy and Greece, but especially in Italy, when I was in Rome on my European sojourn, everybody did that. Nobody watched TV, you know, and everybody would in the afternoon, you just, you know, you had a siesta. I don't know what the Italian equivalent is, but then the places would open up again around 4 or 5 when things cooled down, and the business would be open until 9, 10 o'clock at night. The restaurants are open. The cafes are open.
Oh, yeah.
It's dark. It's beautiful. It's warm. It's humid. And this is in the late spring, way back in the early 80s. And here I am sipping cappuccino at, you know, 10 o'clock at night going, this is great.
Yes.
You know, I'm meeting people. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to people. People were out and about, and it was much more social. It's a much better way of going. And like I say, they weren't stuck in their homes with all the – now I don't know what it's like now. But in those days, people were not stuck in their homes. The TV wasn't that good. Although I did see an Italian version of Bonanza, which was hysterical. But that's another story.
Well,
just imagine.
When I was in Spain, at about the time that people were getting out of work, 8 something, closer to 9 o'clock, they went directly to. So there were like small little bars, but they saw most of it was food, and people go for a little bite and then go home. You know, like you just said, that was their routine. And the sun was out at 9 o'clock at night in Spain, actually, and also in Kiev. In Ukraine, the sun in the summertime, it's out very late. And I was like, wait a minute. And then it comes out early. I'm like, wait a minute. This is weird. I've never seen anything like that. But I wanted to tell you about Colombia. Colombia is making so much money in plastic surgery because a lot of people are traveling to go to get their facelift, breast implant, butt implant. Like to lose
butt
weight,
implants,
their stomach.
Something I never thought we'd talk about on the show.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and we just had an incredible show.
A lot of money.
A week ago Monday, remember we had Ann Ziegenhorn and three other women talking about breast implants and the dangers and the fact that the medical profession, just like the vaccines, they're not disclosing, you know, the dangers of these things. So women are making decisions on stuff without proper information, and men too. You know, they're getting plastic surgery, and you think it's just cosmetic, and there's so much more to it that it's really scary. Now is Colombia, are they doing the same kind of things of non-disclosure of information? Are they more interested in the profit and cranking people through the system?
They're more,
which is what I imagine.
They're more interested in the profit, and over there you don't have no such a thing or lawsuits or nothing. If something goes wrong, it's too bad for you. So that's the risk that a lot of women take, or men, to go to Colombia, go to Costa Rica, to have plastic surgery, and nobody's responsible if something goes wrong. And it is cheap. Also, dentistry. A lot of people say, oh, I'm going to Colombia to do dentistry, unless they got good now. But when I was in dentistry in Miami, we used to have so many cartels come in with a lot of money to our office to have all the teeth done, and we found out a lot of the root canals were halfway done to people in Colombia. They didn't finish the job. They halfway did the job. And we were like, oh, my God. We've seen it with so many patients when they came to our office. Yeah, they didn't do a good job at all. But they were getting a good deal, and people didn't know any better, you know. But so right now the plastic surgery is booming in Colombia. I mean, it is so advanced. I mean, there are a lot of good doctors, but everybody's becoming like plastic looking. They're having facelifts, and I mean, it's not good.
And the scary part about that is if you have an accident or if you have a disease like cancer and you need reconstructive surgery or replacement surgery, things like that, insurance is going to cover that. So it looks like I'm guessing these are elective. These are things that people, you know, they just want a bigger whatever. They just want more.
Yeah.
You know, and so the fundamental problem is people aren't, which is a personal identity problem. It's like, why do you think there's something wrong with you? Why do you think your life would be better if something was bigger or smaller or shaped differently or fewer wrinkles or things like that? You know, I got a face with character. And, you know, every one of those lines I earned. Okay. You know, the scars are real, you know, and, you know, from various, you know, life events. And I don't want to, I wouldn't want to replace any one of them. I mean, I am who I am.
And
I don't,
you know. In Miami, and so is a lot of the Latin countries, especially Colombia, Costa Rica, a lot of the young girls, quinceañera, they're asking for free breast implants. And that is sad. They're little girls. They don't know anything about life. They don't know what
they're
going to
do. Well, not only that, they're not... they're not adult developed yet either. I mean, I don't know when women stop maturing physically, but 15 doesn't sound like a place where that ends.
But the parents are going along with it, and that is horrible.
Well, that's child
like
abuse.
The parents are allowing.
Yeah,
it
see, that's child
abuse.
Yeah.
Because they're allowing it. And, you know, Greg, here in Pensacola, I know a few people, especially this girl that used to work at Margaritaville at the beach. She had breast implants, and one of her breast implants exploded all the way through her neck, just about, and it was bad. But, you know, the lawyers are all in it in this town, too. You cannot find a lawyer to represent you for breast implant because they know they're not going to make much money, and it's just impossible, to sue any of the doctors. And I think they're all in it together. It's very sad. But
it's the money problem again. We're talking about that earlier with Gene. And the thing is the attraction of money to something that is there's a lot of responsibility to go around. There's the ethics of the doctors. All right, that's the first thing.
Yeah.
There is the government licensing and the amount and the regulation of the industry. There are the parents that need to be informed. There are the laws that need to have full disclosure. You know, so there's a lot of, it sounds like there's a lot of failures in the system here. I don't know if there's something that we can do. We actually have the breast implant disclosure law that the women wrote, you know, especially Anne, and that's on writeyourlaws.com. You can find it really easily. Mm-hmm. And that's a model law based on a couple of different, I think, Arizona and New Jersey law. And so they're going to be circulating that to other states. And, you know, the way this works, generally when 10 or 15 states pick up on a law, that's when Congress goes, oh, maybe we should do something too. And so this is going to work its way through. The problem is that it takes too long. And how many victims, you know, are going to be along the way who didn't get the full disclosure, who didn't get the information. But people still have to take responsibility for yourself. I mean, you really do.
Yes.
You know, and I think a lot of folks, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago believed that doctors were gods. They could do no wrong. And when they told you something, you had to do it. Well, what is the, you know, and that's probably fine for 98% of the doctors. But there's a certain percentage out there that don't care. that, you know, they're doing things just for the money, as opposed to, you know, like plastic surgeons that are doing only cosmetic, you know, as opposed to plastic surgeons that are doing, you know, really good, decent reconstructive work, you know, that for folks that actually need it, like, you know, like the cleft palates and some of the other things that from kids and from injuries and diseases.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing the good work. Mm. But again, you're still responsible. You've got to find out. Now, Colombia, where does their money come from? Is it mostly American tourists, or where are they getting their money?
There's a lot of tourists in Colombia, and the beaches are gorgeous, and they're building and booming. The buildings are coming up like you won't believe. But also if you see eBay, there's a lot of, it's called Faja Colombiana. Faja Colombiana means like a girdle. Like a girl the women put to touch in their tummy tucker and, you know, underneath their clothes. They're so expensive. So they're shipping them, like you won't believe, from Colombia all over eBay. So they're making a lot of money. But right now, the whole thing, it's a chaos in Colombia because they're panicking people with this COVID like it's bad. So I went and had a test. And because she was going to meet me in Miami last month, and she got a test and it showed positive again.
Right.
So she had the COVID in January over there, and she was very ill. She refused to take the hydrochloroid and acetromycin. I said, take some here. I'll give you some. And she said, no, I'll be fine. I'll find it over there. And she couldn't find it over there. But anyway, so she went for a test because she had to show that report in order for her to leave the country.
Right.
And it looked positive. And I said, Marisol, it is impossible that you can have COVID again. You were very
sick. The test tests for antibodies. They got the residual antibodies is what they found because they amplify the results. Yeah.
And then she went to another doctor, and guess what? She was negative. What? So they're a bunch of crooks. Right now what they're doing in Colombia, they have curfew. They're panicking everybody so everybody can fall in to take the vaccine. That's the agenda right at the moment in Colombia. It is horrible right now. Yeah.
Jeez, does it sound familiar?
That's
the agenda here. You know, we don't have the curfews, but they do in some states. You know, look at California, you look at Michigan, you look at other places.
Yeah.
It's always the Democrats. It's always the leftists. You know, it's the leftists that channel people into the vaccine. And you and I both know that the vaccine is funded by people that want to cut the world population in half. That alone is reason enough not to take it. Okay. We both know that the side effects initially can be pretty bad, but the long-term effects of cancer, Alzheimer's, blood clots, stroke, everything else that's going to happen from these, this is a life-changing event. You cannot come back from a COVID vaccine. You cannot erase it. You can't fix it. You can't do anything. Once you get the vaccine, your life is permanently altered. And people don't understand that.
Yes. They don't get it. And I tell people, I've been telling one of my Mexican girlfriends, please do not take it. Mm-hmm. And her daughter and son-in-law took it. But, you know, she goes, I'm thinking of taking it. I have sent her so many videos. I don't know what else to do. I mean, I said, go ahead, take it.
No,
you know,
peer pressure.
If that's what you want.
The pressure to go along, you know, why did millions of people wear masks when they really didn't think they had to? Peer pressure.
Are they wearing the mask after the vaccine? Because you know what? The vaccine is not going to help them stop to getting COVID because they didn't get a COVID vaccine. They got a shot of something else. That's exactly what's happening.
Who knows?
And people don't get it. And you know, 65% of our body was created by God, so we can take any type of bacteria, any type of viruses in our bodies. And this vaccine will shut down your own antibodies. Your own antibodies. That's the vaccine is going to do. So any type of sickness or anything you're going to get in the future after the vaccine, you will get very ill because your body will not recognize that at all. That's why all the ferrets, the rats, the monkeys die 6 months after they got the vaccine or earlier.
No, well, here's what's interesting. I got Pianki in the line, too, and Michael Volpe, I'm sure, is going to join us in a minute. And Pianki maybe can confirm this. Here's the most interesting part of the animal studies. The animal studies, they were given the vaccine, Okay. And they were fine until they went out in the wild and were exposed to the wild COVID vaccine, COVID virus.
Mm-hmm.
So what this says to me is that this is, in fact, Alex Jones, one of his last reports before he got sort of completely censored off the air, he said, look, this is, mm-hmm. I remember this from a year ago. He said, this is a two-part situation. First, they give, yeah. first they create COVID and everybody gets exposed to it. That's not the problem. The problem is when you take the vaccine working with the COVID virus to have a combined effect of, you know, all these diseases and population limitations and life shortening and every other event that's going on. So they need the two of them to work together. So if they're diabolical plans, and they're making money off it. That's the scary part. So they're making money off the death of who knows how many millions of people, right? But they don't care because they've already killed millions of people with COVID by denying hydroxychloroquine. So this is genocide on a world scale. But because they've convinced people that in the science, you know, we're doing the best we can. This is, you know, that we. I'm sorry about the 500,000 Americans who have died. You know, we couldn't save them. Well, yes, you could, you genocidal, homicidal, drug-pushing maniacs. Yes, you could have by simply shutting the hell up and letting the doctors that know prescribe hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate, and azithromycin.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it was done. Anyway, there's Michael. We're going to get him
good
on
morning,
just a minute.
Bianchi.
Bianchi, go ahead.
Well, I wore the mask because I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I went in one place and stepped out and in the door about 10 times. I couldn't believe it wasn't calling the police on a black man with a mask on.
You keep saying that. It's still funny, though.
Yeah.
Especially going to a bank.
That's called moving on up, isn't it?
Well, that's your idea of social progress, yeah. But
you're funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Anyway, any comments on this? And then I'll get on to in fact, let's give Michael a guest of the day. We haven't done that for a little while here. I get to play more of my things. Josie, I need to get a theme for you. Pianki, I might even make a theme for you, too. Who knows? But one of the folks that started with us way back when the show first got going is Michael Volpe. And so I got to scroll down here just a little bit. So let's give him – where is – there it is. We'll make our special guest, Michael Volpe. So I'm not sure whether I introduced myself to him or he introduced himself to me. However it happened, you know, way back at the beginning of Action Radio – Michael, you know, we got to know each other. Michael's an investigative reporter. He's an author. He does amazing work with family law, family court. He's helped a whole bunch of people. And we also disagree, too, occasionally, and that can get pretty spicy. But Michael is the genius behind our Action Radio Family Law Project. So anything you want to know about family law, that's the place to go. You can get help. You can tell your story. You can get advice from other people. It's really pretty incredible what goes on. So I've invited Michael back. Apparently this is county, which I know nothing about, St. Louis County. I'm not even sure what state it's in. So I'm going to kind of turn the show over to Michael here and let us know. Well, Michael, take it away. Good to hear from you again, sir.
All right. Well, first of all, it's St. Louis, Missouri. I wasn't expecting you to fail the third great part of this story.
See, he's starting with me already. I can change. It could be a St. Louis, Nebraska. How do you know? There's a Moscow, Idaho. I mean, give me a break.
That's true.
Okay,
it's St. Louis County, Missouri, which includes I think St. Louis City is its own county, but it's very, if not exactly St. Louis, it's right or like all those suburbs around it. But but before we get into that,
we have a St. Louis caller on the line too. So you know, we actually how apropos.
Right. Excellent. So we were actually introduced because I had done the Julie Gothstein story, and this is when you were on terrestrial radio in Florida, and the story was out of Florida. And
so you go back to WBY. That's interesting.
Right.
I forgot that.
Both of us
were
very appreciative because not only was the story good, but Julie's son was in the school that kid Nicholas Cruz shot up, and she didn't know it until he texted her because she hadn't been allowed to talk to him for like a year and a half. Can you imagine that? So you don't talk to your son for a while, and then he's like, oh, hey, there's a school shooter, Mom. And
wow.
You were one – Julie, I think, sent you a link to my article, and you read it and said, of course I'll have you on.
Yeah.
Both of us, we did get that story out, but we actually expected more people to go, of course that's a story I want to cover. So we did appreciate that. So you and I have done a lot of family court corruption stories, mm-hmm. and then you've done them even beyond me. So
yeah.
This is not just another one. So it centers in the area around St. Louis. So what is the difference between this and all of the other stories? It starts with a Zoom conference meeting between almost 40 corrupt, what's called guardian ad litem, court appointees who are supposed to act in the best interest of children, who instead act in the best interest of themselves mm-hmm. while profiting, at the same time handing kids to pedophiles, abusers, keeping good dads and moms away from their kids.
Yep.
They were on a Zoom conference, nearly 40 of them. I think they announced 38 at one point. And for some reason, they thought they could do this covertly. Instead of doing it covertly, it was leaked eventually to me. I put it on YouTube. That was the beginning of a much different investigation because here are there are 38 of them. They all identify themselves as corrupt because they're scheming. For instance, so the main lady, her name is Elaine Podlowski. At the time that the Zoom conference was happening, she was
a judge or is she a guardian?
No, she's a guardian ad litem, but she's prolific. She had like 80 court appearances in the month of December. Do you know how much money she was raking in with 80 some court appearances?
The
target of.
I'm curious.
Millions.
Really?
She lives in a big home, drives big cars, does not dress well or do her hair in a way that would be commensurate, in my opinion. But be that as it may, she is well off. So she was at the time, and this was, I think, January 27, 2021. So mm-hmm. she was the target of a lawsuit that all of them seemed to believe not only threatened Elaine, but threatened all of them. Now, it's essentially malpractice. The legal technicalities are a little bit different, but she was the lawsuit was saying you were appointed as a guardian ad litem, and rather than following rules and procedures, here's all the terrible things that you did.
Right.
And so for some reason, okay, obviously it sucks to be sued, Greg, as someone who's been sued. I can say it does suck, but
I believe
you know,
it. I haven't been sued yet.
I am having a hard time understanding why there'd be 37 other people who think it sucks so much that I need to be on the same Zoom conference to talk about you, Elaine Podlowski, being sued. Secondly, this emailed newsletter appeared. Now here's probably one reason why 38 of them decided to show up, because it was all happening at the same time. So just as Elaine is being sued, it's called Daily Docket News. It appears and it starts to send these like emailed newsletters talking about Elaine, other corrupt guardian, litem, and whoever, and I don't know who's doing it. I'm not doing it. I will say I'm not doing it. I have no idea who's doing it. It would be mere speculation, pointless. But they seem to have all the right emails. So, like, Elaine is a part of, like, a boutique firm with, like, four or five partners. So every one of her partners would get the email. Like, other guardian ad litem would get this emailed newsletter. Judges, shrinks, you name it. They seem to know her orbit.
What's the source of the email? What's the source of these emails?
It's daily. I think it's dailydocketnews@gmail.com.
Okay, so it's just a regular court service.
It's someone who created an email and started a newsletter, and it's brilliant. Oh. And I compared, let's call him DDN for short. I compared DDN to Los Pepes. If you know anything about the drug lord Pablo Escobar, Los Pepes were these other drug lords that finally got sick of everything he did and turned the tables on him and used his own techniques against him, like killing his lawyer, killing like his kid's babysitter. And just suddenly people around him are starting to die. And they fought as dirty as he did. And I think there's no question without their assistance that he wouldn't have been caught because that wore him down. And so Daily Docket News, it's not exactly the same, but it's like when you fight dirty against dirty people, it has an effect that's so different than against clean people. So she was completely unnerved by the fact that at the same, she meaning Elaine Podlowski, that she's being sued that this Daily Jacket News is appearing. And then the lawyers and the person suing her, her name is Evita Tolu, they were contacted by other people, and they didn't turn it into a class action lawsuit, but suddenly they had, I think, at least 10 cases total where they're showing the same pattern. So what's the pattern? Mom, and it's always mom, and children or child disclose abuse. Elaine Podlowski is the guardian ad litem. She runs interference. She appoints James Reed, Dr. James Reed, who says it's not abuse, it's parental alienation by mom. She's putting these thoughts in her head and seems to always diagnose mom not only with parental alienation, but both borderline personality disorder the pattern was multiple times, particularly borderline personality disorder. And then as a result of that, and narcissism and all of this, like other things. So it was like the same diagnoses all the time. And then borderline personality disorder, it's like 1.4% of the population. Well, then apparently James Reed found all of them, right? So that
was James Reed again?
The lawsuit. And he is a psychologist that Elaine Podlowski recommends to be appointed to do custody evaluations a lot. He's not quite as prolific as her, but he makes a lot of money through her, right?
All right.
So that's the subject of the lawsuit. So in the middle of the Zoom conference, they even say to scheme to help Elaine pay for a forensic examiner to figure out who Daily Docket News is, to like do hacking and other shady things to figure out who it is. And then, but they can't just send her money directly, apparently. So for 6 minutes, they go through a scheme to like hide where the money is coming from. At other times, they are talking about cases they're not even on. So like, I'm not going to remember her name, but one of the guardian ad litem starts discussing what she had found out about another case that she was not on. And so not only did she know it, but she's now sharing it with 37 other people. Okay? So none of that, for folks, so you're not supposed to do any of that. You know, if you're not involved in a case, you're not supposed to try to pump people for information. Those things are, they're a matter of public record. Like, you know, if you wanted to read the court transcripts, you could. You're not supposed to be going around and the people involved in the case. It's less unethical, but for some reason, and they're talking to judges. They're talking about ex parte communications with judges. Like one of the gals at one point in the Zoom conference is like, I spoke to Judge so-and-so about this. Well, yeah, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to walk into a judge's office out of the blue as like a participant in the case and without everyone else there and go, hey, Judge, let me just, shoot the breeze with you about this, Tolu case or whatever one. So then, as soon as I release that, more things come out. So the first thing that comes out is this 9-minute audio recording that a 14-year-old covertly made in her confrontation with a judge in St. Louis County named Nicole Zellweger. So Judge Zellweger is demanding that this child go live with her father. The guardian ad litem in that case, her name is Venus Jackson. She is also on the call. Jackson has determined that it's a case of parental alienation, what a surprise, and that the reason the daughter doesn't want to go with dad is because mom, Angie Finer, is alienating her. Daughter tells judge, what do you mean you're going to send me to him, but he's molesting me. She actually says it, not word for word, but she accuses him of being a child molester right there in court. And the judge says there's no evidence of that.
Yeah.
Now, Greg, if she just told you and she's the alleged victim, I'm not saying that's going to lead to proof 100%, but isn't that a little bit of evidence?
Oh,
she's
huge.
In court.
I got some questions for you when you're ready, and unpack this a little bit. Yeah. So let's start at the beginning. For folks that are new to this, there's a whole bunch of terms that a lot of folks don't understand that you and I are much more familiar with. Guardian ad litem. This is where a lot of these problems start. What exactly is that?
All right, so that is what's called a court appointee. So that means the court, the judge, solely has the power to say, this Avita Cholu case, you know, it's just I don't remember the judge in the case, but
yeah.
it's so complex. It's so difficult. Let's
I know it is. I want to make it sure I make it as simple as possible.
Right.
A guardian guards right. Who are they acting for?
The child. So the guardian ad litem, their job description
right.
is to act and the best interest of the child, which
and
sounds
why,
like a great job description.
It does.
But
why are they necessary?
The worst.
Yeah.
They're
why does the court
necessary.
Use them?
The court only claims they're necessary. They should be abolished.
Okay.
In fact, this
okay.
and other stories are evidence that all of these people should be abolished immediately. In fact, one of the guardian ad litem, the most important for me moment of that Zoom conference, her name is Sarah Pleben, very corrupt. Like five men have come out that she's immediately picks one side and then does everything she can to get that side to get the best deal. That's how Sarah Pleben operates as a guardian ad litem. At one point, she says, this threatens to take down the entire system. Judges are in on it. Right?
Well, we
so
should.
That's
part of
yeah,
our job here.
To take down the entire system means to eliminate guardian ad litem as a functioning part of the court.
Is it by law? Is there a statute
yeah,
that governs these people or no?
Yes, there's statutes, but it allows the statutes in Missouri allow the judges to do whatever they want, that they can not only appoint a guardian ad litem, but a parenting coordinator, custody evaluator, this evaluator, that evaluator, rather than giving – remember, may, shall, one of the first times you and I talked, may, shall, the two most important words in the law. You need a statute that says a judge shall not appoint a guardian ad litem or any other third party. In fact, I wrote out this law that in the state of Missouri, custody and divorces shall be determined only by the judge, the two parents, their attorneys, and any witnesses that either party may call. That's witnesses and evidence that either party may call and introduce. You can say you can massage the language, but basically, in the state of Missouri, the way to fix this is to take down, as Sarah Pleben said, to take down the entire system. In fact, look, I would go further, but I think this would be, and we've been talking to, we've been talking to a state senator. Her last name is O'Loughlin. She gave us 2 hours and then put together something on Facebook so far that received a lot of traction about what she talked to us about. So she seems to be on board. But that would be the law that I'd want passed, that completely eliminate the system, that in divorce and custody in Missouri, the judge has to make the decision based on what each of the two parties present, period, and then you're done. And there's none of this that drags it out.
I want to give people a picture of this. All right. So we have a parent and kids. So we have a good parent with kids, and they're going to family court, and they're in a family court for a divorce. And the question is going to be, you know, who's going to get the kids and how much and how it goes. So let's say the other parent is abusive, and I'm not saying male or female because it works both ways. All right. So you've got parent A is the good parent with the kids right now because they're the good parent, and they threw the other, you know, bum out. Or however it works.
Right.
So the bad parent gets a really good attorney and they go to court. So now you got the judge.
Right.
All right. So the judge, you know, is responsible, as you say, for awarding custody and time and, you know, whether it's split or however it works. Now, at this point, the judge might say, I'm not qualified to do this. I want to have an expert I'm going to bring in. And people that want to understand, all the folks that have done this, and Angel Law has reported on this, you know, our Mad Moms Fight for Justice have reported on this. Family court is a business. The more money they can generate, the longer they can drag out the case, the more contested they can make the divorce, the more money they make. So this is a moneymaker.
Right.
So the first person that's brought in, and stop me when you want to comment on this, is this guardian ad litem. So the judge says, I need more help. I'm going to bring in a guardian ad litem. How am I doing so far?
Right. You're almost probably not 100% of the time, but that's exactly right. But the other
Well, when they do bring one in.
Right. It almost always it starts. And then the other thing that happens is then the guardian ad litem says something like, you know, this is really complicated. Your Honor, I recommend that you appoint Dr. James Reed.
And that's where the psychologist comes in.
Right. And then in fact, Reed, what he did was it's so complicated. In Avita's case, we should bring in Jennifer Van Leeuwen. And now all three are being sued. And so there's like this domino effect.
Let me hold just for a second. So now we've got a judge, We've got a guardian ad litem, and we've got a psychologist all involved in this case, plus lawyers for both parties. Okay, so this is getting more complicated, and this all takes money, and this all takes time. So then the psychologist, what's their role in this? They will say, do they evaluate the children and the parents, or what do they do?
Right, they'll do what's called a quote-unquote either psychological evaluation or a custody evaluation, though most times these evaluations fall outside of all guidelines. So one example, Courtney Nolan, she did, maybe it wasn't even her, they were diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, but they also took the MMPI, which said something completely different. And that's like a Minnesota something PI. I don't remember exactly what it's called.
Psychological inquisition or something. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Test. And it's like 500 questions or something. And he ignored it because it didn't come back with anything near borderline personality disorder. In one case, whatever the disorder was, you had to have committed a crime, and the person he accused of the disorder didn't commit the crime. So the evaluations are total garbage, and on top of it, because they're appointed, they're treated like he's the third party or she's the third party. And again, all of these things happen all throughout the country. The difference is you don't have in the rest of the country a video where almost 40 of these corrupt actors decide to identify themselves, and they throw out other names too. They throw out the judge. The main villain judge is Michael Burton. And one other thing that we got was Burton sent, it was a gal group. So it was like an email group, this group, an email talking about the lawsuit that Evita had filed. And at one point he goes, it actually goes against judicial canons for a judge to comment on a pending case. However, Judge Hemphill and I felt in this case it was necessary to comment on the case. And he goes and comments on the case. That's how brazen the corruption is. In an email, he goes, yeah, no, I know judicial canons, what I'm about to do I can't do, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway.
So I want to get to that of how it's supposed to work and how it actually does work. So back to our scenario. So now the psychologists, now are they child psychologists? Do they have to have any particular qualifications? Do they have to be PhDs?
In theory, they have to have all kinds of qualifications, but this guy Reed, his specialty is like geriatrics. So generally what these judges do, there's all sorts of rules that they just don't follow. They are supposed to have a specific skill set, but the judge just appoints whoever they want to appoint, because what are you going to do?
See, that's the corruption. This is why I want to get this out there.
Oh, that's totally the corruption. But the corruption's even more deep than that, because the corruption starts where you said that the judge pronounces that this is too complex. I don't have enough expertise. No, that's not how it works, Judge. You have enough expertise because you're the judge.
Exactly.
You don't get to say, I'm gonna go ahead and appoint people, force you to pay for them because I don't have enough expertise. That's how it works. If they have enough expertise, they should be the judge. Why are you appointing them to be the judge? You're the judge. So the corruption starts with the whole idea that this judge is like, hold on a second, because it's not that they don't have enough expertise. It's not that they don't understand enough. It's not that this person, Elaine Pavlovsky, will help them. It's that they want Elaine to make money, that they want Elaine to come to them and say, my good friend James Reed could really contribute to this case as well. That's what they want
money,
to do. That's why.
Yeah, that's why they extended it. All right. So let's go back to our scenario. Let's go back to the so the report comes back to the guardian ad litem. And the report can be this is where now somewhere along the way something gets reversed. So in other words, the good parent with the kids is trying to keep the kids from the abusive parent.
Right.
Somehow along the way, what was a report of child molestation gets turned around to parental alienation. And I want to really focus in on that because these are two critical terms. Yeah. So child molestation, we know what that is. Okay, that's horrible. It's one of the most disgusting crimes on the planet. But the abusing parent a lot of times ends up, the molester, or the abuser ends up with the kids. I want to sort of describe that process. So the psychologist comes back with the report, guardian ad litem. And the guardian ad litem says, the psychologist says the kids shouldn't be with the good parent. They should really be with the bad parent. And the reason is because we don't agree with the child molestation accusation by the kids who have no reason to lie. We're going to go with this theory of parental alienation. The good parent actually turned the kids against the bad parent. Let's spend a few minutes on this, because this is something that's critical. There's a reversal that goes on. So the good parent becomes the bad parent. The bad parent becomes the good parent between the psychologist, the guardian ad litem, and the judge. Walk us through that, because that is critical for people to understand, I think.
Right. So what a Dr. Reed will do is he will, in his report, say, I don't believe the child in these allegations. In fact, I think that this is a form of parental alienation. This child is being poisoned. The only reason that this child would ever accuse their good, loving father of such a heinous thing is because mom is poisoning the child against dad. That makes this very much an emergency. It's my recommendation that custody be changed immediately, as quickly as possible. And in fact, I recommend that for at least 90 days there be no contact between child and mom. And so that's the sort of thing that Reed does, and that gets turned into an order. And now you have – and there – and what these judges, and all throughout the country, what they do is by appointing all of these people, then they just – they point, oh, well if there were mistakes made, you know, I was following the recommendations of the experts. So –
Yes, follow the science, follow the experts. We've heard that before.
Right, yeah. The experts I appointed told me to do this. I did that. It's not my fault if anything bad happened. That's exactly – and and this is, again, a nationwide scam. The difference is you don't always have almost 40 corrupt players identify themselves the way they did here.
Okay.
So here's one other thing. What you described in its own slightly different way is what Evita's Tolu's lawsuit is also describing. So you just described it on the radio as a threat to the system that Sarah Pleben is so concerned about. That lawsuit, since it verbalizes exactly what you said and said you are all responsible for it, presents a pretty significant threat. And we should also note that since she's filed, other people have filed not exactly the same lawsuit type, but similar lawsuits arguing various degrees of malfeasance, including a guy named Kenneth Rosa, who also had Elaine Podlowski, who is not only a good dad, but has six kids, and only two of them he's not allowed to see. Amazing and remarkable. And so he filed it like a form of malpractice, and so he's one of many men. So you'll hear about women, but plenty of men who've also been wronged by that system, by Elaine Podlowski herself.
That's why I say I'm not putting a gender on the abusive parent. That's why I want to keep it. Just because there may be more men doing certain things and more women doing certain things in terms of child abuse and molestation. That's not my concern. But what I want to talk about is why this process happens, why it is. Listen, I want to make sure everybody understands parental alienation, the purposeful poisoning of the mind of your kids against another parent. Okay. Now, I don't want to get that confused with parents that slip up and say, your mom is a this or your dad is a this. You know, I mean, parents slip up. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about an actual, it's like gaslighting. It's a systematic campaign to drive your kids against the parents. Now, the problem is that this is a tactic. I mean, it may be – I'm sure it's a reality. In fact, I know it's a reality in certain cases. But what we're talking about here is the imagined use of parental alienation when, in fact, there's really molestation or some other kind of abuse going on. So that's the excuse that the psychologists are using. And like I say, there's got to be a reason for this, why they're taking a perfectly – let's say that we have a perfectly reasonable and believable accusation of child molestation. And then somehow the psychologists – go ahead.
The reason is money. I don't want to get too deep into a debate, but the parental alienation is still not real. The poisoning of a child – happens. Parents do all kinds of terrible things. The problem with parental alienation is you are the latest in a long line of people to describe parental alienation your own way. Parental alienation is wherever you want
it
to be.
Then.
That's not
correct
real.
I
don't know what it is because everyone has their own interpretation. It's whatever you want it to be. So
that's probably the problem.
It's poisoning. Somebody else says something else. And it totally reminds me of what that one Supreme Court justice said about porn. He's like, I can't really define it, but I know when I see it. And that's not really working in the law setting, I think. But there's definitely, and by the way, Woody Allen, and they just did a document, and they talked about it. was a big proponent of using this. He was arguing that Mia was alienating Dylan against him. The reason that Dylan was accusing him of child molestation is because he was the victim of parental alienation. That's not only 100% true, but he's probably one of the first celebrities to try it.
Okay.
There's no question that they misuse it, but so the reason is, like in this case, like in Evita's case, as soon as the parental alienation, well, we need to appoint Dr. Van Leeuwen because she's going to help us get rid of the parental alienation. So one reason.
So the kids go into therapy
because,
with this person to
right,
cure this, imagine
also,
the this legal
right,
tactic.
But also, if you were,
right.
If you're trying to cure something that doesn't exist, you'll never cure it, which means your
exactly.
services will never end. And that's the
But the billing look, never ends either.
I argue that this is
yeah.
all the legal version of child trafficking. In fact, I wrote an article
okay.
that I believe that this is RICO, not the RICO that I wrote. In fact, the RICO that's already on the books, Racketeer Influence Corrupt Organizations Act. If you're
mm-hmm.
listening, do Mike Volpe, St. Louis Family Court, RICO. The article should come up because they know that they are handing kids to the abusers. They know that their diagnoses aren't real. They know this, and you would have to prove that they know it. But
okay.
the way you prove it is through the enormous amount of evidence of violations of laws, rules, procedures like perjury, HIPAA, other things that
mm-hmm.
you – if you had a good faith belief that the child was lying, why did you have to commit perjury 5 times? That's not a good faith
yeah.
belief. All right, so that's
yeah.
how you prove it. But and this is
well. Let's get back to
your
scenario real quick. I want to get back to the so the report from the psychologist goes to the Guardian. The Guardian reports to the judge
mm-hmm.
that the kids are with the wrong parent. They really should be with the other one,
mm-hmm.
who we know as the abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's assume
mm-hmm.
that the child molestation is real. That the children are not lying, because children generally
mm-hmm.
don't lie about something like that. So it goes to the judge, and
mm-hmm.
the judge says, "Well, my reports are saying from my psychologist to the Guardian that these kids really belong with the other parent." Walk us through that. How
mm-hmm.
did that happen, and why does it happen?
Well, it happens because it's a court order. So he
okay.
gets the judge gets a recommend what Reed recommended turns into
mm-hmm.
a court order. Reed doesn't
right.
have the power, except the court order in no substantive way is different from what Reed recommended. So it is Reed's order. He just doesn't have the power to do it,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's the scam. So now they've changed custody, and now the object is to get the child to disclose as little as possible, all while living with a molester or abuser. Why? Because disclosures are difficult to cover up. Not impossible, obviously. But the more of them, the more cover-ups. So now the intensive therapy that they put these children through is designed to do one thing, to get them to accept that this is happening, that there's no point in resistance. And
so therapy is not to
help
them with the fact that they're being molested. It's actually to try and
no,
tell them that the molestation's not happening, or is it trying to what is it trying to
that
do?
They could try to even go as far as that it's not happening. That basically to minimize it to the point that, listen, so what? Big deal. You just have to get used to it. It's not really that big a deal.
Okay, so it's futile
no,
to resist and complain about it, right? So basically trying
right,
to shut the kids up.
No point to disclose. There's no reason for you to disclose. And
no one's
going to
believe you anyway. Yeah. That's
right,
no one's that's another layer of abuse is what it is.
And it's criminal abuse, and here's how far it goes. So here's the amount of shocking evidence that I've received. On one of Elaine's cases, Vandenberg, she is secretly communicating by text message with Caroline, that's the mom, her attorney. And as the girl is disclosing, Elaine is basically going, man, another headache for me. And they are scheming to try to corner mom. You know, like at one point, mom reached, because mom, daughter's disclosing. So mom's reaching out to anyone she can to get somebody to lobby on behalf of daughter. And so she reaches out to some psychiatrist, get her to stop. I've got it handled. This is Elaine talking to mom's attorney. Covertly.
Elaine's the judge, right?
Mom didn't know that. Elaine Podlowski, Elaine Podlowski is the main guardian ad litem. The guardian ad litem, who's supposed to represent the best interest of the child, is covertly talking to mom's attorney. And not like to even benefit mom, which would be completely wrong, but they are scheming to run interference against mom. the guardian ad litem and mom's attorney, according to the text messages. This is all the same county. That's the difference,
right?
Is we started with something as compelling as that Zoom conference, and it never stops. And there is an audio recording in this case of a that I'm still not allowed to release, of the judge Bruce Hilton berating mom in a way that's like shocking, mind blowing, that a judge is still on the bench with that out there. So, and that's still coming, because the source won't let me reveal
right.
it, but I think I...
Oh, no,
don't
reveal anything
you're
not supposed
to,
yeah. But so the judge
now
awards...
Go
let's go back to our scenario for a minute so everybody understands this. So the judge then awards, you know, based on the guardian ad litem's report, kids to an abusive, molesting parent. So they now have charges.
Mm-hmm.
Now... Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about the judge and the abusing parent's attorney, because you've got an abusing parent attorney that is sworn by law to go for justice. They can't I don't know if they can advocate something. They can't advocate for a crime to be committed. So are the lawyers for the abusive parents in on this too? Are the judges in on this? What's the connection here?
You cannot believe how in on it they are. So now
let's talk about that.
I'm breaking a case. Hagemeyer. She, same pattern, loses her kids because of an accusation of parental alienation, which is brought by the guardian ad litem in that case. Again, this is St. Louis County. Molly Murphy is the guardian ad litem. She's the one who brought it to the judge. And basically, Molly Murphy's recommendation turned into a judicial order, Judge Virginia Lake. Why do I point out all these names? Lots and lots of names, and where we are figuring them all out. Girl not only discloses, but discloses to, and it's Jefferson County because dad, that's where he lives. Sheriff's office. I get a copy of the report. She's like, he ripped my panties, stuck his dick in me, and he effed me. That's what she said to the cop. She is still in his, not custody, sole custody. The lawyer, his name is Ryan Monroe. He represents dad. He has been not just contacting the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office, but essentially harassing them, calling at all times, trying to get them to drop the case. I don't even know how that's legal. But he's definitely doing it because, on top of everything else, he asked that they be deposed in the custody case. The Jefferson County Sheriff, and I know this because I got an email, he's like, we're going to file our motion to quash or whatever. We're going to file our response. We're not going to let you depose the people involved. So, by the way, number one, there is irrefutable evidence that as we speak, there's a Jefferson County Sheriff's Office investigation into Melissa's ex. Even though he has sole custody, and we know that the investigation is that the daughter accused him of molestation, but somehow the court has decided that she should still be in his sole custody. How in the world, Greg, could you possibly have a thorough and any kind of a good investigation when the court insists on this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's dramatic testimony, and that to me is child rape. That's not just molestation. That goes way beyond molestation. Here's the thing, though.
Right.
So now we've got the police involved. So we've got the police who are taking police reports of child rape, all right, as you just testified to, basically, and they're still protecting the abuser. They're still protecting the rapist.
Not so much the police, unfortunately. What it
Well, let's talk about
like
it. They're not protecting the kids. So let's straighten this one out.
County prosecutor's office, Wesley Bell, and a person who has been elected to that position. It appears that when you molest your own child in St. Louis County, those allegations die in the prosecutor's office of Wesley Bell. It does appear like the detective. Well, I don't know why. What it does appear
still looking at that.
Is
right.
The detectives do an investigation. They do a thorough investigation. They bring the file to the prosecutor's office and say, here's why you should charge them, and he never does.
Have you talked to the detectives or the investigators?
I haven't I should mention, because your audience is getting this the first time, I did break a lot of this stuff, but just as much work was done by a colleague, Megan Fox, who writes for PJ Media. In fact, she's got either 12 or 13 parts and counting. She has talked to detectives. And what she told me is detectives say, look, our hands are tied. This is not the first time that I have heard of us investigating this kind of child molestation, bringing it to the prosecutor's office, and the prosecutor's office declining to prosecute. That's Wesley Bell, St. Louis County.
So the judge is awarding kids to a molester. The police are or the whoever's investigating, the detectives or people investigating this, are providing a report to the prosecutor to prosecute the molester or child rapist, and they're suppressing the charges. Those charges are being dumped. So now everybody's protecting the child molester, child rapist, child abuser. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
And because this never leads to any prosecution, any criminal charges, that's then used against mom. See?
Right.
See?
Because you're saying the charges are baseless. Yeah.
Right. Obviously, it must be parental alienation. Why wouldn't they have charged him?
Okay. I see how the cycle works. Yeah. No, it's like a perfect it's like a perfect cycle. Everybody's reinforcing everybody else's lies. So let's get to the child molesters themselves. Generally, what I found in my own knowledge of people and talking to you and the cases that you had, generally the molester is wealthy enough to afford really good attorneys.
Right. Sometimes. there's actually...
So why are molesters being protected?
There's all sorts of ways for people to figure out how to exploit the system, and there's grants and there's other things that ways that people can get money. And those sort of folks, you're right, they're not always, but there's all sorts of money, federal money, in like one specifically is called fatherhood.gov, which encourages fatherhood on a variety of issues. So
well, I encourage fatherhood.
If you,
I mean, that's one of the biggest problems in communities across the country. I'm not accusing bad fatherhood. I'm encouraging good fatherhood.
I know, but if you do it, just because that's what the program says it's doing doesn't mean it actually necessarily does it. But if you do it blindly, which is what some of these grants do, you can put kids in the hands of molesters, because the grants work by how much extra custody time you can add for fathers. So you're not going to be discriminatory. So the issue, the devil is in the detail. But fatherhood.gov sounds great. And if you talk to the average person, of course I want to encourage fatherhood. Well, you have no idea what they're actually doing. But
that group is a problem. They're hiding behind what is good fatherhood and using it to exploit the system. So we've got about 18 minutes left. I want to get to so now we have all these people that are reinforcing an incredibly corrupt system. You know, kids are being taken from the good parent, given to basically a criminal parent. All right. So now people are fighting back in this county, it sounds like. So let's tell that story. Let's talk about are the good parents getting together, all 40 of them, and saying, wait a minute, we've got a common experience here. Let's see more than 40. All right, so what's happening with the good parents? Are they getting together? What's their story?
Well, just a week and a half ago, just a week ago, last Tuesday, we organized, and actually when I say we, it was 99% Megan and I was there, organized a press conference.
We should get Megan on the show, too.
Right, Megan's talk should come on your show, we organized about 30 of these parents just at this press conference, but not only are they getting together, they are finding each other. There's a guy named Brad Ferkel, who is a CEO of the CEO of a pretty significant company. So obviously he was a powerful and wealthy guy who got trapped in the system in 2004 and had Sarah Pleben and got out of it. And he explained how he got out of it. And he's been doing some interviews, but a few things. It showed how Sarah operates, number one, and showed the layers of corruption that he forced her hand and made her look at the evidence. But she had no intention of giving anything that he may have presented any weight. And she was determined to not only get his ex-wife to have as much custody as possible, but to maximize the amount he was going to have to pay in child support. But that happened in 2004 with Sarah Pleben, who did not seem like she was a rookie at that point. So he is an example of how long this has been going on, how many different people they try to ensnare. But Evita Tolu, the litigant in the one case, has found many, many parents. We found it not just in St. Louis County. There's a judge out of St. Charles County named Erin Burleson, who is the daughter of a judge who seems to have just gotten there through nepotism, who runs these schemes in St. Charles County. These kinds of schemes are in Jackson County, which is where Kansas City, Missouri is.
It is nationwide. That's probably worldwide, from what I understand. I mean,
this is a huge phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's absolutely worldwide, and I mention her name a lot. Look up a woman named Samantha Baldwin. She just wrote a book called Everything Will Be All Right. She alleged sexual molestation during custody. She believed that her ex was drugging and then molesting their kids. When the drug test came back positive, they said you were sticking those drugs in the kids to alienate dad. Same thing, same exact thing. And one other crazy thing about that case, she was smeared by the BBC. Sam Sandrazini-Rucki was smeared by 2020. It's two women across the pond, amazing, and parental alienation misuse in both cases. They even both go by Sam. But the cases are remarkably similar. And that's where you see the global phenomenon. And it's definitely, and by the way, and we've got time, I think, a few minutes. The group,
yeah, you have 50 minutes. Go for it.
Yeah. The group that's doing this, they're called the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts. They have a Missouri chapter. Elaine Podlowski is a prominent member. How do I know that? Because Elaine puts it on her biography. By the way, I call, email Elaine, Greg, and she refuses to respond to me. Am I not a charming guy? What is the deal? But anyway, so...
Who wouldn't want to talk to you, Michael?
Right. Who is the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts? It's a global trade group of judges, lawyers, and other professionals who participate in family court. So it's
wait. Do that organization again. I got to look them up now. What's it called? I mean, I can check the podcast.
Association of Family and Conciliation Courts. At the risk of
what's conciliation?
Look up. Conciliation, like we're going to work it out, basically. It's a good way, like a positive way of saying we're going to resolve your disputes. But we're going to.
Is it like mediation? Or no?
It's the way they envision the courts is what they're saying. But if you want to look up my article, Making Divorce Pay, I was the first person to do a significant expose of that group. I'm reading a book by Doreen Ludwig about AFC. She just put out a book, which is much more in-depth. And it tracks what they do. Because they're so big, they put out webinars, seminars, other research. They have a quarterly newsletter. Many of the people who participate in family court are members. And what is their research? Well, the research is, number one, that parental alienation is a very significant problem, that you should be extremely skeptical of any kind of abuse allegations. And here's the key part. And so how do we address this problem? A parenting coordinator is great, and here is all of our research on how parenting coordinators can help. A guardian ad litem is great, and here is all of our research. And we go on and on through all of the court professionals. So what are they doing? They are creating a problem that doesn't actually exist, and they are providing the solutions. And the solutions just happen to be the appointment of a bunch of court professionals, many of whom just conveniently are a part of AFCC. And that's exactly what's going on. Like James Reed, I don't know if he's a member because he doesn't put it on his bio, but he's presented at AFCC conferences. Elaine is a member. She's presented. They are the ones running the family court. They are the ones taking the research, applying it to court. And there is a very important and very good interview with a woman named Deanne Salcida. She's a former judge who admitted, and this happened in California, to giving custody to a pedophile because she believed that he was being alienated. And in the interview, one of the things she says is, during our judge's training, we were told be very skeptical of abuse allegations that come up during divorce, that this is most likely parental alienation. Well, I don't know that AFCC specifically did that particular training, but I bet that their research was used, even if they didn't directly influence it. But this is what's happening in courts, and it's global because AFCC is global. Like in Doreen's book, she references like the head of some part of Australia family court who's a member of AFCC. So it's filtering all throughout, and they are the proponents of 50-50 is best. We're not going to have time to argue this, but
they remind me
of
the teachers' union because they're serving their members, but they're not serving the kids.
Right, they are absolutely serving their members, but through the research and all of this, that creates the idea that parental alienation is a huge problem, that it can be fixed through our bevy of services. None of it is real. None of it they can back up. And in the end, they're making tons and tons of money. People like Elaine Podolsky, the Garden at Lightham, James Reed, this psychologist, Ben Lindsay.
So they're almost like slave traders. This is what it seems to be. They're like slave traders. They're making money off kids. They're saying that the kids are making false accusations. I don't know what kid would do that, quite honestly. I think it's mm-hmm. enough bravery just the kids to be able to make that kind of accusation. Because
right.
first of all, they're going to blame themselves. They're kids.
Wait,
they're all alone.
That's not only is that 100% true, but there is a huge difference between an allegation made by an adult and an allegation made by a child. An adult is exponentially more likely to lie than a child is about the same type of thing. A woman is far more likely to cry rape than a 7-year-old. All right, so it is very important because I'm with you and the father's rights people that false allegations of abuse aren't like 2% of court cases. They're nowhere near 2%. It could be as high as 20%, 30%. But
well, it works.
Those are primarily those are made by an adult. In my first book, Bullied to Death, she claimed that Chris's ex at one point claimed, I must have forgotten this, but during our marriage, he stuck a gun to my head. Just out of the blue, she remembered. Can you imagine if someone stuck a gun to your head? Do you think you'd
think
that
remember that
incident until right? That's the sort of allegation that you should be skeptical of. Not a 7-year-old or in Melissa's case, a 14-year-old going, "My dad ripped my panties," and in very graphic detail describing what happened to her. She's a lot less likely to lie. There are cases. I can't remember there's a famous one, but where the kids lie, but. They should not be treated with nearly this much skepticism. And Caroline in the Vandenberg Curse.
We don't
see
adults with that much skepticism. The kids are doing far worse than adults. This is the crazy part.
We teach kids that if something happens to you, go to an adult, go to an authority figure. They will help you. They will protect you. Her daughter is this close to like 10 people. Her daughter's 10 years old. What do you think she thinks about that cliche, if I go to adults and authority figures, they'll help me. How is she going to – when she gets out of this, do you think she's going to trust the cops? How about the courts?
Nope.
How about the media? How about anyone? Who is she going to trust?
How about
she
any potential relationship
no
she wants
to
have? You know, how about a potential relationship or marriage for the rest of her life? And this goes for any kid that goes through this kind of experience. Boys, girls, doesn't matter. But how would you trust anybody,
right.
you know, when you come out of this?
But,
so,
By the way, Elaine is in that case, Podolsky, the Garden at Lightham, and she's on audio saying all kinds of crazy things. She's at one point she goes, your daughter, she uses the name, your daughter says he stuck his finger in her butt. Did he do it? I don't know. You don't know. I wasn't there. You weren't there. She says he did it. He says he didn't. And later on in the conversation, basically said, look, you're going to have to get over it. He's going to have access to the child. Get over it. This is the kind of things these people say because they're running interference. And almost 90 court appearances this lady had in the month of December alone, Elaine Podolsky, and she's one of at least 40 who are all corrupt, various levels of corrupt. It was great. I talked to Venus Jackson, though I didn't know about the Freiner case at the time. And I was like, you guys were scheming to combine money. And she played it off like she's like, well, I didn't give any money. I listened. And she actually participated in the sense that, and I had forgotten this as I was talking to her, but she was suggesting like ways to funnel the money that would be like less easy to track. So you weren't
wasn't that interesting?
Listening. You were, yeah, you were offering suggestions, Venus. And by the way, you know what? I don't even care about that as much. And here's something crazy about the Freiner case. I care more that you allowed for a 14-year-old to go to the dad. She said, told the judge, is molesting her. Here's how sick that case is. Angie doesn't know where her daughter is now. They won't tell her.
Yeah.
They just won't tell her.
Do you see any kind of commonality? They strike me as sociopaths and psychopaths. The judges, the guardians, the psychologists, you know, the prosecutors,
all
the attorneys. How do they do what they do? They don't have conscience.
I'm not going to get into pop psychology, but a lot of these people are drunk on power. There's a lot
of –
Elaine is so drunk on power, it's sick. This guy Hilton, when you listen to that audio recording, Judge Hilton, he's so drunk on power. He totally gets off on trying to demean someone because he's the judge and you're the litigant and I can. All right, exactly the reason Bill Clinton used when they said, why did you have oral sex with Monica Lewinsky? Because I could. All right, you know, it's the same thing. Sort of, you're drunk on power. And by the way, and I love Bill Clinton, but he did say that.
I still hold responsible for Waco. We'll talk about that one.
We'll get another day for that.
Another day,
but
yeah.
There, a lot of these people are drunk on power. The other thing is most of these people aren't qualified to compete in the marketplace. So like James Reed, if you had the choice to go to him, no one would go. So he ingratiates himself with somebody like Elaine Podlasky, who likes him because he'll do her bidding. And the judge likes Elaine because the judge has an idea for what he wants to do, and Elaine's willing to go along. And he likes James Reed because he's another cog in the wheel, and that's how they build a business, and a very successful business. I think they found 12 cases where Elaine pawned things off to James Reed. Now, obviously, she's not the only one he gets business from. In fact, they mentioned it, Dr. Jim Reed. We all used Dr. Jim Reed at one point. I think one of them said something like that, right? So he's getting cases from all of these people. They're all as corrupt as him. Look, you know, I guess this is how it works. You know, marketing and old niches. You are trying to ingratiate yourself in an ecosystem with people who are like you, right? So, you know, if you are interested in art, you probably hang out with a lot of artists, all right? You know, who do you think Michael Jordan hung out with? I'm betting a lot of basketball players, right? So if you're corrupt and unqualified, you hang out with other corrupt people and unqualified people who can help you get something that can make you money.
Yeah, networking. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
You know, and it's the other alternative is, you know, if they can't agree and the kids could end up in foster care, that opens up a whole new can of worms because we know a lot of those kids end up in child sex trafficking. We had that discussion.
And
we need to do it again.
That's a global issue. I just if you guys want to find my YouTube channel, I just released audio recording out of Forsyth County, North Carolina, where DSS, as they call it, Department of Social Services, steps in and removes the child. And there's a backstory outside of the audio recording, but the mom was moving, but the new place wasn't quite ready, so she's in a hotel in a transition period, and the kid opens the hotel door and wanders off. And even though they found the kid, someone thought that was appropriate to call DSS, and DSS never bothered to get a court order, even though they were supposed to. And then DSS was keeping the child, even though there's a North Carolina Supreme Court ruling on this very thing, that if a child wanders off, that's actually in and of itself not enough for obvious reasons, because almost every parent has had a child wander off. Am I right?
Kids wander off. Yeah, I've done it.
Right. Yes.
I did when I was a kid.
You do not want to call DSS because a child wandered off, or every parent will have DSS called on them. And this DSS employee just ignores her and says, I'm not giving your kid back. This is how arrogant, and that's another person drunk on power. This is how arrogant they are. This is how much power they think they have. And they are messing with parents' lives. And it is a global thing and certainly a national thing. But again, and look, I encourage it's called St. Louis Family Court Corruption. That's the actual YouTube video. Summarizing it is good, but if I did my job, you should be really interested in the St. Louis Family Court thing. Find that Zoom conference. It's 40-some minutes. Watch all of it. It's YouTube. No one forces you to watch any more than you want to. So 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. One other thing. Do we have time? Yeah. Can we talk about big tech in this case?
Sure. You got about 2.5 minutes, and I want you to give your also I'm referring people to the Action Radio Family Law Project, and put your videos and put everything you want on there so people can get a chance to see it. Okay. You got about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Whatever your thoughts about big tech, they have helped us on this case. I dropped that Zoom conference onto YouTube. It's at 13,000 views. It caused all kinds of headaches. You think it would have gotten that many on Rumble, BitChute? No, I don't believe that for a second. I was at the press conference, and everybody on Facebook is going to me, how can I watch it? How can I watch it? How can I watch it? So I was like, maybe I should Facebook Live it. 2,000-3,000 people watching through me, through my phone on Facebook Live. We've met a whole bunch of victims through Facebook Live. In fact, one of them is contacting me through Facebook Messenger right as we speak from St. Louis County. Twitter, LinkedIn even to a lesser degree. There's some, like every time I get an audio or video, I want to drop it onto YouTube because I found that good things happen when those audio and video wind up on YouTube.
I'll put them on YouTube and put them in our family law projects. You know, I mean, any place you can put it, you know, the more people that see these videos, the better. Yeah.
The big tech is not a caricature. That doesn't change that they banned the president of the United States. It doesn't change what they're doing to James O'Keefe right now. It doesn't change all of the things they're doing, but they're not a caricature. And there's something very powerful to what they do. And when it benefits you, it changed my perspective because there's something very powerful about being able to leverage Facebook, leverage YouTube. They're a force that powerful people don't understand, cannot deal with. And so if you're leveraging them, it's very difficult for them to deal with it. I have confrontations that I record that are immediately on YouTube. That's very unnerving for a powerful person to be recorded and suddenly you're on YouTube. That's exactly what happened to Venus Jackson. I talked to two other ones, Kelly Chevalier and Mary Davidson. Those are three corrupt guardian ad litem. That interview forever is on YouTube. That's something like it's interesting how it played out in this case, and that's all I'll say. And just don't treat them like caricatures.
The only thing I want big tech to do is I got like 5 seconds left. If big tech would just stop censoring conservatives, don't censor by ideology. Leave ideology alone, and big tech would be fine. We'd have no problems with them. Michael, I got to go. Thank you very much. This has been wonderful. We got just a few seconds left. Give any contact information you want, and then we have to go.
Right. Look, and I agree with you. My website, the blog where this is in, is theprovocateur@blogspot.com with two E's after T-H, T-H-E-E, provocateur.blogspot.com. So check out those articles.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Michael. We'll do it again soon. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And again, The Provocateur, that's where you'll find Michael, his blog, and the Action Radio Family Law Project. You can get in touch with him there, too. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time.